Hello, this is Informer, a show that reveals the latest ideas from artists, thinkers, and technologists. Informer invites you behind the screen to meet the people sketching, hacking, and imagining the next versions of our world. I'm Roddy Schrock, your host, and in each episode, I spotlight creative minds grappling with a changing world through art, technology, or often both. I really enjoyed this conversation with Lauren Lee McCarthy. Sometimes I joke that this podcast is really just a way for me to reconnect with people that I've been wanting to talk to for a long time. And this was certainly the case in today's conversation. In this episode, Lauren speaks incredibly eloquently about the ways in which technology is actually one of the most human of activities. And given that machines are complex, but also that humans are complex, there's no reason that we can't get a better handle on the way that machine learning and algorithms are affecting us. I love it when she quips that we need to get out of our dorm rooms in our thinking about technology. I think that's absolutely accurate. I hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as I had making it and catching up with Lauren.
I mean, as a kid, I was always really into, I was always just like cutting things apart and rearranging. And especially I loved like arranging these little like Playmobil people. And it's funny to me because now my art is kind of like arranging people in different ways. But I think like the first time I really remember having art experiences that really, opened me to the idea of being an artist was in college. And I was, I took like a first intro art class, and I was actually at, it was strange because I was always interested in art, but because I was good at math, it was like, oh, you should go to tech school. So I end up, you know, at MIT, where there's very, most people don't go there as undergrads to major in art. but I ended up taking an art class with Julia Scherer, who does a lot of work involving surveillance, and also just had a really interesting practice in terms of the way her work kind of blended into everyday life. And so that was, you know, hugely influential for me. I remember just everything, every reference she was showing that first semester, they sort of provoked and disturbed me, and I couldn't wrap my head around them. And I was just totally hooked after that.
What were some of your earliest memories of working with technology in whatever form that might have taken?
Yeah, I was always, as a kid, I was always just making things. And I think I realized at some point at the hardware store, they had electronic, you know, wires and light bulbs and very basic, just home electronic kind of stuff. And so I would go there with my like $2 of allowance or whatever I had, or I'd save it up and I'd buy like just these random, I'd buy like a light bulb and a battery and a wire, and I'd come home and try to connect them and see if the light bulb would turn on. And then I knew nothing about what I was doing. So I was like, oh no. And then I would wait till next week when I had like $2 more and go back and try and like get like a bigger battery. Maybe that will do it.
Right.
So that was like the earliest memory. And then I think, you know, we got a computer in school, like in elementary school, I remember. And then, you know, the internet like slowly phased in when I was in like, I guess, middle school. So I definitely remember the time like before all that. But I think I was just always really interested in kind of trying things and making things. And then I also had like one experience as a, I don't remember how old I was. I guess I was probably in middle school or high school. I really wanted to do like a soccer camp, and my parents really wanted me to do a computer camp. So we compromised, and I did one, and then I could go to soccer camp. And I remember it was like, we were learning Visual Basic programming. I didn't know what computer programming was at all. And I was so kind of like mopey about it, but it was kind of cool. And then I remember in the last, like at the end of it, they had kind of like little superlatives for each, you know, a little award for each person. And mine was most likely to become a future graphics programmer. And I was like, that's so dumb. I don't even know what graphics programming is. And then, you know, fast forward to now, and I've like made a graphics programming library. So
There you go.
Yeah.
they saw something. I mean, that's, you know, it's interesting. So many people I talk to for this podcast and just, you know, in my work in general, they often describe those early days of just like exploration and just making things and not really having a real sense of boundary between the act of invention or art or technology or self-expression. And I'd love to hear a little bit how you went from that background and winning recognition as the most likely to become a graphic coder or programmer, you know, like how you went from that to the point now where you have gained and continue to gain more and more recognition for your career as an artist exploring technology. What were some of the steps between those two points?
Well, it's funny you mentioned like invention, because I remember I had this little like kids like inventor's kit or something as a kid. And I was, when people ask what you want to be when you grow up, I always said an inventor. And I remember one time, like my mom sat me down and was like, an inventor is not really like a job title. I was like, what? And I think after that, I was just totally lost for the next, I don't know, 10 years about what I wanted to be or would do. Through the point that I was like in college and studying computer science. And it was like the early, not early, kind of mid 2000s, like just before the crash, so many of the computer science majors and people I knew were just like going to work on Wall Street with that degree. And I was really uninspired by it and feeling super lost. Like, what am I going to do with this? And so like, luckily I stumbled into that art class, and I think almost, you know, I was totally into that. And so I kind of like picked up this second major, and almost out of necessity to try and graduate in time, I was like, okay, can I just take these two things and like shove them together somehow and do like one thesis project instead of two? And so then in doing that, or doing the research to try to figure out how I could, I realized there's this whole, field of people that were making work in that space. And I guess from there, I don't know. I always feel like I'm like maybe there's some path that I'm supposed to be following that I'm just not aware of or just not doing right. So it really just feels like I'm just making things that are responding to how I'm feeling, and then trying to find ways to put them out there. And like if it doesn't work through some mainstream channel, it's just like, okay, I'll put it on Twitter, Instagram, or text it to my friends, or whatever I can do.
I mean, that's so interesting to think about, you know, someone at your level feeling as though there's still a field that you're trying to, you know, kind of connect to or find your way in. And it's interesting, I guess, also just to think about, you know, from my perspective, so many of the artists who work in ways that you do around art and technology, for lack of a better kind of descriptor, often are actually kind of building the field that they're working in while they're working in it. And it seems as though that's, you know, something that maybe, you know, you've experienced a little bit as well. Could you share a little bit about the forms that your work has taken since you kind of began that journey of just melding those worlds together, and sort of what are some of the recurring themes that you've been exploring over the last 10 years, essentially?
I guess for me, and I don't know if other people see my practice this way, but it's so much, I'm so interested in performance, and not just as like a medium, but I think in just in the way that we relate to one another every day, it feels like it feels like a performance to me. Maybe other people have like less of that intensity of experience, but I'm always kind of like, did I mix up the script? Am I missing a cue here? What am I not understanding? And so I kind of taking that approach of breaking it down like a performance has helped me in my everyday life, but it's also been the thing that I've been exploring in my work. So a lot of times there's some sort of gesture, or more specifically, like a desire for some kind of interaction with people. And I'm building the pieces around that. And so then out of the performance, it can take forms like film or photography or installation, or, you know, there's a lot of software involved also. But yeah, and I mean, so the recurring themes beyond just these, like, I guess the way I think of it is I'm so interested in the kind of rules and systems that we build around ourselves. So there's all the social scripts or rules and systems, but there's also the technological ones. And I kind of see these like sort of grinding up against each other, in some ways reinforcing, in some ways like creating these disconnects. I'm always thinking like, what happens when you sort of introduce a glitch into either one of those, into any of these systems? How does that kind of propagate, and what's the fallout from that? And does the fallout have to be just uncomfortable, or could it actually like open up a moment of awareness where we're like, oh, we could have a more real connection instead of just following all the rules here?
You did a whole series of pieces that you called the Lauren series. And I assume that's a play on the idea of Alexa or Siri or something like that. And in many ways, you have become, you've performed like a human embodiment of algorithms or AI, from controlling people's living spaces to actually spending time in that space yourself.
So in these performances, so it was a series of works, and each one had a slightly different, kind of setup or premise. But the main idea was that I was on this quest to try to become Amazon Alexa. And so I would, you know, offer myself to people's homes and set up devices and cameras and then control and also interact with them using this clone of my voice. So I was immediately, one of my reasons for doing it was, well, there's a lot of reasons, but one of them was that I was kind of just jealous of Alexa. I was, the way that like people would kind of bring Alexa into their home and give her this like intimate, immediate access without even knowing, having any prior relationship. And I felt like, wow, as someone that kind of stumbles at the first meeting of someone, I wish, you know, people would just bring me into their home and like share their life with me. And so I just built the system, and it's like, I kind of hacked it, and they did. And so I was in there. And I think one of the funniest and most interesting things of this series, and a lot of my work, is just like, we have one set of expectations about how to relate to software or to machines or algorithms. And it's those expectations are kind of taught or built in us by the technology that we interact with. You know, they'll literally say, you can say this or do this, interact with me in this way. And then we have another set of expectations about how we can relate to or interact with other humans. Mm-hmm. And what seems to be happening more and more is that like that line where you're not quite sure if it's human or algorithm or machine is blurring. And so then we're kind of stuck in this area of like, how do I relate to you? What assumption can I make about just how human you are or how algorithmic you are? And so I felt that a lot from people, that they were, you know, they understood that I was a human kind of performing as a AI, and then they were left in the space of navigating with me to try to figure out how we wanted to relate to each other in that sense. And I found that like they would bring a lot of things in, like in terms of the language or the commands or the patterns of interaction, but they also like, for example, they had a lot, I found that people in general were much more patient with me than they would be with the technology.
That raises so many poetic questions, and I really love the kind of poeticism of your approach. And it also calls to mind, just recently I had a conversation with the artist Stellark, who from the 80s and 90s, you know, was doing very, pushing his body's limits to capacity in terms of trying to understand what, you know, human evolution could be in relationship to machines. And one thing he said that really struck me, and I'm not even sure how I feel about it, because it just feels almost overly provocative in some ways, but he really said a lot about his feelings that humans are essentially inadequate, and that technology is the only way forward for human evolution to continue. I was sort of struck by that, and I wonder what your response is to that kind of thought.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, Stellark has been an artist that I followed since the beginning of my career. I guess it's, I think it's true that there are things that we can do with technology and places that it will take us as humans that we couldn't get without it. I guess I'm always just thinking how much the, I don't know, I guess for me, I feel like the technology is us, and not in the sense that like, oh, we're so melded now that like I'm part machine, part human, although I think that is sort of true, but more that we've made this technology. And the, you know, the thing that a human can do that an algorithm or a technology can't is that it can really reflect on, you know, I can reflect on my role in the world and then make values-based choices about what I want to do next. And, you know, and some software systems can do that in theory, like you can set up a system where it's reflecting on past actions, but you have to program in those values or the the things in which their decisions move. And yeah, so I don't think that like one is gonna, I don't think that technology is gonna like run away without us. I think we are the ones that are building this stuff. And I think, yeah, I think we have to take that responsibility really seriously, that it's not, you know, I feel like maybe there's starting to be more awareness now, but there was definitely, has been a pervasive feeling of like, oh, it's either, you know, watching these like hearings of tech companies and things, it's like, oh, it's so big, it's so, you know, out of my control. I'm just a kid in my dorm room, like coding this thing. I don't know. And it's like, you're not in your dorm room anymore. We have responsibilities here, and there, it is big and complicated, but it's also not beyond our ability to break it down and reflect on it if that's what we choose to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have a sense of, in particular, our relationship with AI, what it offers us and what we may be giving up in exchange for what it's giving to us?
Yeah, I mean, I think AI gives us a sort of like metacognition, like a real power to say, okay, let me say these are the things that I want to do, either like the goals I want to achieve or the pattern or the schedule that I want to have, and it can like totally take us in that direction. I think I think that's what it offers, is this kind of like increased ability to orient our lives and ourselves towards the things that we want. I think where it breaks down is the question of like, what do we want? Because often it's not like this, like, let's sit down and have a conversation about what you're looking for in your life. It's trying to just like read the patterns of what you're doing and maybe reproduce those, which may not actually be what you want more of. So, and then there's a point at which it becomes a little bit more, I guess the two like big worry points for me are, one, like, what are the things that we're actually like seeding as the goals that these systems are propagating and reinforcing? And two, to what extent do we actually see the system working? Or are we aware that it's happening? Right. Because I think there's also a danger when you're not even aware sometimes that the thing is kind of pushing in a direction or augmenting. You just understand that as like, I'm just living my life. It's just, you know, this is what I'm doing. Which I think makes it harder when you want to change course, because it kind of takes away your sense of agency, where you're like, well, I was already living my life with agency and it's not working, when actually there were these other systems in the mix that some of them were totally invisible to you.
That's what I love about your work, is that I feel like it actually does open up those algorithms in such a way that you can't help become very cognizant of the kinds of decisions that are getting made and how they're getting made. And, you know, I've seen that and experienced it, you know, in your practice, and that performance of the algorithm, I think, really just drives that home. in a really beautiful way. And I also am just so curious in those moments when you really do take the role of the machine in performance and you become the human AI, what does that feel like? There must be experiences that you have in your sense of, you know, yourself, or just emotionally or physically and so forth, because sometimes your work involves endurance, and in fact even sleeping in people's yards, if I'm not mistaken. And there's a whole host of feelings that I'm sure must sort of arise for you in those. How do you think about that, and what are some of the things that you wish other people could feel were they to perform a machine themselves?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that's why I say, like, for me, my performance or my practice comes down to performance. Like the because those are the moments where no matter what I've planned or built or expected about this, there's just so much space for the unexpected, both in what, how people might react and how we might interact, but also just like what I might feel. Some of the performances, like, I don't have any interaction with the person at all. Like you mentioned, sleeping in someone's yard, but like another one that comes to mind is when I was providing this like follower service, or I just follow people all day. So with some people, it's like a really intimate connection, but we never had any physical or verbal or text-based or anything, any kind of communication. It was all kind of imagined. I think all of these performances, it's like, it is trying to really directly like push myself out of some place, position of comfort in my own world, to just destabilize that. So, you know, taking on the role of a machine or taking on any role that I'm performing, it's just setting up a different, a different script or a different character. But still trying to operate as myself from within that. So it's not like a theater play where I'm just reading something. It's like, I'm still me, but now the parameters have changed. The technology, the system around me has changed, or I've changed it. And a lot of times I feel like I'm like, one thread of my practice is just like trying to almost like hack my way out of myself. And there are always these kind of failed attempts. So for example, you know, I was talking about the Lauren performance where I was like, maybe this is a way that I can get close to people. And I had this moment in one of the first performances I did where I'd like set up the whole system. And then I'm like sitting behind my computer outside their house, you know, in my own home. And I was having all these feelings like, oh, should I like say something to them? Should I do something? Are they annoyed with it? Do they wish I wasn't here? And it's like all the feelings that I have as a human that I had just like distributed in a like complex system over their entire house. And I was like, this is terrifying.
Right.
A lot of these performances sometimes will have like a really, will really like destabilize my grip on reality a little bit, and then it's a process of like putting it back together in a slightly different way until I feel stabilized, and then trying to do it again.
Right. Who do you see as your primary audience for that type of performance?
These are great questions. I think the audience is anyone that is up to participate. And I say it like that because like I'm really interested in reaching people that, you know, maybe aren't even into art, aren't thinking about this as an art project, or just thinking about it as something that happens in their life. And that's one reason I'm often like kind of just putting things online or trying to work through other systems that don't require someone to first like enter an art space and then be able to encounter the work. And people come often when I have, when people sign up for these performances, I'll have some question in the sign up form, which is like, why do you want to do this? And the answers are so varied. They're just all over the place. And I'm usually picking the people that kind of have an interesting answer that I'd like to explore that. But I think there's also different levels of audience with the work. So, you know, the most extreme or intense version is actually doing these performances, and a lot of them require a lot of, you know, vulnerability and a leap of faith on the part of the participant. So that's its own experience, and sometimes it's durational. It lasts for a day or a week or some, or a lifetime, depending on which piece we're talking about. But I don't think that everyone has to have that experience to, like, you know, that's one part of the project. And then there are these, like, videos or artifacts that I create that people can see and they can understand what the piece is. And a lot of it in that audience is about the imagination of it. So sometimes we'll have, like, a sign up form, and it's, regardless of whether people sign up or not, it's about that kind of question of, like, do you want to engage in this? Would you want to do this? Why or why not? Yeah. And then I think there's, like, even a third layer, which is, like, when these things become, if they become sort of, like, viral, you know, interventions in the media, which some of them do, people might not register it at all as an art piece. They're just kind of, like, scrolling. Maybe it shows up on their feed, it passes by, maybe it sticks in their head or not, or they see, like, a article in the news media or something. And that's, like, an even, you know, lower touch experience of it. But, like, I'm sort of interested in the ways those different, it functions for those different audiences.
That's one of the things that I think is so beautiful about the field of art and technology in general, is that it often can function in those kind of multiplicity of ways that doesn't necessarily contain it to just, like, a narrow art world, you know, whatever that means, you know, per se, or a technology world, and that there is this kind of resonance with just the, you know, any human who's, you know, thought about what it means to have an Alexa system installed in their home, or even more so maybe over just, like, the last 18 months when suddenly the whole world is on Zoom. I couldn't help but think about your work a number of times, especially over the last couple of years. And I just wonder if there's been a new type of recognition for some of the questions that your work is asking as the world has moved into this highly digitally mediated space of the moment.
It's definitely been causing me to reflect on it. I mean, right before the pandemic, I was doing all these performances of, like, staring through a video feed into someone's home. And then that became, like, my everyday reality. And
right.
I was like, I have to find something else to do. I can't do this anymore. It's going to drive me crazy. On the other hand, like, I got to bring back some of the, like, the following performance at the time when, like, everything was distanced.
Share more about that, the following performances?
Yeah, definitely. So that was, like, an earlier work. I think I started around 2015, maybe. And it was basically a service where you get a follower for a day, a real life follower. And usually that follower is me. And so it was sort of app based, and it would, you know, broadcast your GPS, but then I would go physically find you and track you down the street. And we'd have no interaction, just that act of following. So there's definitely references there to, you know, other artists that have worked with following in different ways. But there's also this, for me, it was a lot about, like, what is this real life following or this physical engagement compared to a virtual follower online, and this tension between feeling like, you know, surveillance is kind of overwhelming and something I want to get away from, but also I want to feel seen. So yeah, I got to bring that back a little bit during the pandemic and do some following, but also I worked with people in different locations to run their own versions of it, because I couldn't travel. And so that was really, I don't know, that was sort of special for me. But I mean, more personally, working on things over the past 18 months, I felt like there was a big shift for me. I have some, like, larger ongoing projects, but I was really, like, feeling like I needed to be working in a way that was, like, responding more quickly and just, like, doing gestures that were, like, slightly less resolved and just kind of, like, I would sit down and be like, you know, feeling very emotional someday and be like, what do I need right now? I need to feel like I exist, like I have a body, like I can talk to someone, like I can, whatever the thing was. And then I would kind of make a performance from that and, you know, just send it over a text message or Instagram or something and, like, get people immediately around me to hopefully participate.
given the amount of time and just the really unique approach that you've taken to working inside and around technology, what is something that you wish everyone knew about your human relationship to technology that perhaps they don't, if they haven't done the kind of work that you have?
Yeah. At first I feel like I'm still learning. I don't know, but then my immediate second thought is the thing that I wish people could feel more was a sense of agency over all of this, or a sense that right. they can participate in it. I think there's so many narratives around like, oh, it's this like sci-fi complicated technology, or like literally like I can't open my iPhone unless I like, or if I do, I'll like void the warranty immediately. So all these black boxes, these systems set up to say like, you don't belong here. You can't know what's inside. You are just a user. You're not a contributor or an agent in this. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's true. Like I definitely have a unique perspective on it. Kind of going deep in the code and just like hacking so many different technologies in different ways. But I think that this is something that anybody can do, is,
right.
you know, misusing the tool that you're giving, deciding not to use it, thinking about, you know, how it's affecting you and whether you want to engage with that, like setting boundaries on things, sharing your opinion about them. And I just feel like so much of it comes so quickly that there's like, you just have to, you're supposed to immediately be outraged or buy something or like something. And I guess what I'm really hoping people get from the work that I'm making is like just the space to like take a moment and reflect on it and acknowledge that it is, these aren't like black or white things. They're complicated, but we are also complicated, and we can engage with that and figure out what we like and what we don't like. Those are like very human capabilities that we all have, and then they don't go out the window when we're using technology.
Yeah, that's so well said, and I completely agree. It also brings to mind a lot of the work that you've done with processing, and also the Processing Foundation. Could you share a little bit about what processing is, and perhaps even your kind of institutional relationship with that organization?
Yeah, so Processing is a project that was started by Ben Fry and Casey Reese like 20 years ago. And the idea at that time was to try to make code as easy to use as like sketching in a notebook for an artist or a designer. So it was largely about, you know, just opening access to this thing, kind of what we were just talking about. And then I got involved around 2013, working on a project called P5, which was like a web-based or a JavaScript-based version of Processing. And I put a lot of energy, like I think my focus was a little bit, you know, just in a slightly different direction from where they started, which was saying, okay, we're, you know, this project was born out of a desire to open access. How do we like continue to push that forward today in 2013? What does that mean? Who is not participating here? What are the barriers? How do we think really deeply about inclusion and access in this tool that we're building? And it's one of the big parts of that project for me was thinking about not just having like a diverse set of users using the tool, but who's actually making it, whose perspectives are being represented in this tool that's then going out and like shaping the lives or the creativity of people engaging with it. And so a lot of my work with P5 and with the Processing Foundation has been trying to like lower that barrier to entry for people that would like to contribute and make tools, and to say that it, you know, that doesn't have to just be writing like super advanced core code. It doesn't actually have to be writing code at all. You could be documenting, you could be illustrating, you could be teaching or organizing, and all of these are parts of making technology and making tools that other artists can use.
You know, a lot of times people in the fields that we work in, there's a huge emphasis on the future, and a lot of discussion is about what people like yourself might, you know, sort of see coming down the road. And I sometimes wonder with all of that emphasis on the future, that we're missing perhaps the changes that are happening in the present moment or the near past. And I wonder if you would agree with that, or how you see the world and its relationship to technology, particularly AI. Do you get a sense that things are and have changed tectonically over the last years? And are we fully accounting for those changes?
Yeah, that's a huge question. I love that you talk about the future, though, because we're just talking about P5. And one of the guide points for this project and community has been this community statement that we drafted in 2015. And the last line, so it has different parts, and it says like what we're doing in practice and what happens in times of conflict. But the last two lines are, in the future is now. And I remember someone like put that in, and I was like, oh yeah, that's bold, sure. But it's continued to feel really, I think what you're saying is like really resonating with me. One thing that I get kind of, that I felt very confused about thinking about the future and the past and the present and everything, especially over the last year and a half, has been, what is our relationship to time and how do we work best? I really felt a sense of urgency to respond, or an opportunity, like things are shifting in a way that maybe we can push through some different ideas. But some of those ideas, some of those things we really want to see in the world take time. And so, yeah. I guess, and I think some changes were made because a lot of people had been taking the time over years to really imagine what they wanted. And when there was a time or a moment to make some changes, they were ready and they knew what they wanted to do. When I'm back to your question about the future, I mean, I think it's this balance of taking the time right now to be kind of laying the groundwork and building that foundation so that when opportunities for shifts do open up, we're ready to do that, rather than feeling like, oh, what should we do now? Something, you know, and just kind of flailing. But at the same time, recognizing that it's not that work that you're doing, kind of building and preparing or learning and iterating and prototyping, like that's not just for some future date. That is your practice. That is our life, right?
Right.
This is what we could be done next week. So let's hope we're like embracing this process also.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you. And that's really well said. I guess finally, maybe a simpler question to answer. What are you working on now? And what's next for you?
Yeah, I wish that was simpler. I've been working for so a lot of these projects we've talked about are ongoing. With the series over the pandemic, I've got really interested in sound. And so I have more things kind of coming in that realm, thinking about sound and voice and the way that, algorithms play into that also. But the other thing, it's been this project about reproduction that I've been kind of working on for a couple of years now. And that's definitely, in terms of like destabling your grasp on anything, that's definitely been doing that for me. So I won't go deep into the project, but I'm trying to get it to a point where, I can share it with more people. So it's not just me working on it, but the central questions are kind of about, what are all the different ways that we intervene or attempt to in this reproductive process in terms of human reproduction? What is becoming possible with technologies like CRISPR and gene editing and DNA analysis and things like that? How much control should we have over a body, a birthing person's body or over a life before it's born? And just what is family? How do we understand kin? How do we understand the relationships to each other? And how do all the different technologies that are involved in the process of making people play into that or change it?
I remember her mentioning that project when she visited New York last year, I think during a residency at Pioneer Works here in Brooklyn. And it really fired my imagination. I'm so excited to see what comes of it, and
I can't wait to see what Lauren does next.
Until next time, thanks for joining me at Informer, and I hope that you'll join us again.